You're listening to Andrew Horn's Rock Revival with me, Andrew Horn, the guy with the daft surname. It is mine, I swear. My voice sounds a bit different this week as I've got a rotten cold. Thanks, kids. Is the sort of things that come home as well as homework from school. So yeah, after COVID, I've now got a cold, so I'm just having a great time. So my voice is all over the place. So I think what I'm going to do after this show is spend the evening editing out me coughing. So anyway, this is a show where I talk about rock and metal albums throughout the years, mainly the 80s and 90s, and both classic and obscure albums. And tonight I'm going to talk about an album by a band called Warlock. And this is an album called Triumph and Agony. It's the fourth album by this German band, and it was released in September 1987. Of course, Warlock was the band fronted by the incredible Doro Pesch, the very well-known and still going strong metal singer from Germany. I have interviewed Doro once upon a time. I'll get to that a little later in the episode. So Triumph and Agony, it was the fourth and sadly final album by Warlock as a band, and it's a really good snapshot of the metal scene at the time in mid to late 1987, and it does have some real anthems on it, in particular the opening track, All We Are. Now that track, it has one of the most anthemic choruses ever. It's just fantastic. The video, as cheesy as it was, and by God it was cheesy, was a really good track that got a lot of airplay on Headbangers Ball at the time. And it did help to raise the profile of the band, but mainly it raised the profile of Doro around the world. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself there. Triumph and Agony, it is the fourth album by Warlock. They had come out in the early 80s with Burning the Witches, which was followed by Hellbound and then True as Steel. And those first three albums, they had a much more European metal sound, the more sort of thing you would hear from Accept or Scorpions and things like that. Not Scorpions, what am I saying? A lot heavier than that. But definitely Accept. There's a lot of an Accept feeling there, maybe some Running Wild as well in there. So with Triumph and Agony, they did move in a slightly more commercial direction. The previous albums were more straightforward heavy metal, more, you know, the full-on European heavy metal sound, and they were fantastic. But with this album, they had a much more polished production. It was recorded in the States. It was recorded at the Power Station in New York and Cajun Recording Studio in Philadelphia as well. It was released on Vertigo in Europe and Mercury in the US, and it's listed as having Jerry Balin as the producer. It did have a different lineup on it, so the previous one of the guitar players and the bass player, Peter Zaghetti, I hope that's right, I do apologise, and Frank Rattel, they were replaced before this album was made by Tommy Bolin and Tommy Henriksen from the US, who I believe would stick with Doro for the album that followed this, which I think in some territories was released as a Warlock album, but I know it as Doro's first solo album, Force Majeure, which was a great record, really, really strong hard rock record with metal elements, but it was moving away, further away from what had built the band originally in Warlock. So I found Triumph and Agony. Triumph and Agony came into my life in, as I say, with most of the albums I talk about on this show, in the mid-90s. It was the height of alternative rock. Grunge was dead and gone, or it's on its way out, and things are moving more into just straightforward alternative rock. There was ska, there was punk coming in, there's all kinds of things like that around the world, but I still wanted my fix of 80s metal goodness. Thankfully, I found a secondhand copy of Triumph and Agony, and in all honesty, I bought it for on the strength of the cover alone, which has, like, you know, the magical Warlock-type character on it, grabbing hold of a very beautifully painted Doro Pesch. It's the sort of thing that you know, Boris Vallejo would have done. If you're familiar with Boris Vallejo, anyways, one of the greatest fantasy artists ever. And it's very much very much of its time fantasy metal album cover, but I was just like, I need that. Thankfully, when I put the album in, I was greeted with that opening track, All We Are, which is one of the greatest 80s metal anthems of them all. And it has such an irresistible hook. Honestly, go and check it out, that song. That it sums up everything you need to know. It's a great sing-along track. The other thing I don't really like about All We Are is that it doesn't really have a very good solo, and that is something that does come up a few times on Triumph and Agony. I love guitar solos. I love real mad histrionic guitar solos where people are just going completely overboard with it. And there's a bit of restraint on this album. But anyway, yeah, All We Are. It's a fantastic track. It's 3 minutes 19, and it kicks serious bottom. That was followed with three-minute warning, which I thought at the time when I first heard it, it almost borderlined on thrash. It's fast, it's mean. Doro, with her raspy, awesome German accent, is going absolutely crazy on this song. It is only 2.5 minutes long, and there's a heck of a lot packed into that track. 3 minute warning, which is 2 minutes 30, oh, the irony, is it was a real blast of adrenaline and a great track to follow All We Are, which was kind of mid-paced. Again, the pace is kept up with track three, I Rule the Ruins, which went on to become one of Doro's most famous tracks during her solo shows, and she still has a really vibrant and busy solo career now. And I Rule the Ruins still gets played, although from the live footage I've seen of recent years where I Rule the Ruins has been played, the guitar has been played in half the time it was on the original. So the original has a bit of a speed metal, thrash metal feel to it. But the amount of downstrokes has been halved, and it annoys me. I like things to be as they were on the album when played live, because that's what you want to hear. But still, it's a very good song, and has a really nice I Rule the Ruins feels more like a Merciful Fate, King Diamond sort of song, but with Doro's customary Germanic rasp. It's a fantastic tune. So after I Rule the Ruins, which was something of a classic and still remains a classic to this day, this is followed by Kiss of Death. I think a lot of bands in the 80s had a song called Kiss of Death. My favourite will always be the Dokken Kiss of Death song, though, from Back for the Attack. But we're talking about Warlock here. So Kiss of Death on this, it's fast and it's hard. It's a great 80s metal song. It does show off some better musicianship than some of the earlier stuff, which could be a bit primal in some cases, but it does have a bit more of an American sound than some of the earlier tracks there. This is followed with Make Time for Love, which is it's a big metal ballad. It's quite bombastic. I'm not sure if it really works entirely in relation to the other tracks that we had. After All We Are, 3 minute warning, I Rule the Ruins, and Kiss of Death, it does feel like the album is taking a bit of a breather with Make Time for Love. That's not to say it's a bad song at all, because it really isn't. It's an excellent song, and it's got a huge chorus, and I'm all about a huge chorus and a great guitar solo. And it does tug at the heartstrings, especially if you hear this as I did at the impressionable early teenage years. And it's like, oh yes, this is speaking to me. This is powerful. This has got everything I need from a song. But yeah, I think it does pale a little bit in comparison to what has come before so far with the first half of the album. Now, I did have this on cassette, so after Make Time for Love, I would make sure I'd fast-forwarded to the end, and I would then flip the tape over to be greeted by East Meets West. When East Meets West, there's going to be one hell of a mess, apparently. So, of course, this is before the fall of the Berlin Wall. So as far as I'm aware, this song does relate to the fears and the worries of what things would be like when the Berlin Wall came down. You know, would it be a terrible war? Would there be awful, awful things going on between the two halves of Germany? As it turned out, it was a generation-defining moment of joy, and I think everything's been for the better since that, and we need more moments of joy in our life. So after East Meets West, which has some really chunky guitars, that is something about this album. The guitar tone is really, really chunky. This is followed by A Touch of Evil, which again brings us back to the King Diamond, Merciful Fate sort of, not particularly occult in terms of theme or lyrically, but I just think the feel of it has that sort of theatrical coldness that King Diamond And of course, Merciful Fate had on a lot of their material. And it's just wonderful. It's a great track. Now, after that, there's a more well-known song. I think it's well-known anyway. It's one of the songs that people tend to remember in terms of Warlock, which is Metal Tango. And it didn't really work for me. I thought it was a bit of a weird sidestep for an album that was pretty solid in all by all respects. So Metal Tango, it does have a really good chorus. It's got all the quality songwriting, the quality musicianship. What it doesn't have is it doesn't have that X factor that makes things, you know, really leap out. And yep, it is played as a tango, a literal metal tango, and it's not brilliant. I never really got on with this. I preferred the heavier, faster things that had that more cold sort of straightforward power to them. Thankfully, that was followed by Cold, Cold World, which gave me everything I needed that Metal Tango didn't have. Dora was really going crazy with the vocals. There's some screaming in there. There's a lot of her accent heavy, powerful delivery there. It's just excellent throughout. Cold, Cold World. It's not like 3 Minute Warning earlier, which is in 2:30. This is 4 minutes and 1 second, and it's just a really ballsy, powerful metal song. It just has everything I could want from it in that song. Now, the album does close with track 10, which is For Emma, which at the time when I heard it was a bit of a surprise to me because I wasn't really familiar with rock and metal being sung in other languages. Now, mostly For Emma is sung in German, and it's beautiful. It is an incredibly beautiful song. There's so much going on in that song. It is ballad, but there's something melancholic yet uplifting about it. It's gentle, but it's powerful. It is very much a song of contrasts. It was a brilliant, brilliant track, and a really fine way to end the album. I was really impressed with that song, and I really wanted more after that. I became a huge, huge Dora Pesch fan, so I tracked down everything else she'd done up to that time. So I tracked down the other Warlock albums, tracked down Force Majeure. When I was getting into Dora, she was just about to release the Angels Never Die album, which I must cover that sometime, because there's a lot to talk about with that. There are some good songs on it, but it's certainly not as good as Triumph and Agony. And I also tracked down the self-titled Doro solo album, which I believe was produced by Gene Simmons. I think it was produced by Gene Simmons. I'll check my facts on that. But that was a really powerful, straightforward rock record that really didn't have much in the way of metal on it, and felt a bit more like an Alice Cooper sort of album. It had sort of an Alice Cooper, Joan Jett feel to it, that Doro solo album, apart from the opening track, Unholy Love, which was a banger. What a song. That was superb. But anyway, Triumph and Agony, I feel, was a particular high point, and I think that is an opinion that is shared with a lot of fans of what Doro has done over the years. But I did go and find everything I could from Doro. It was hard to find posters and things at the time because, you know, grunge and alternative was big at the time, and I did manage to find a few in like back issues and magazines and things, and I caught some things on mail order. I remember applying for an application form to join the Doro Pesch fan club, you know, where you could order signed photos and things like that. And bear in mind, this is the 90s, so this was all done by hand. And I sent it off, and I got a lovely letter back with instructions on what to do if I wanted to order anything. And from what I could see, judging by her autograph on things, I think Doro had written my address, and that was just a nice touch. It was a nice personal touch. It looked like her handwriting, and I convinced myself it was hers. But, you know, that's the sort of fanboy I was. Oh, leave me alone. I was sat in Sheffield, bored out of my face, reading comics and listening to 80s metal, and I just wanted to be connected in some way to these people. And I loved sending letters out to them. It was nice to get that back. So that was really cool to receive that. So after all that, the mists of time moved on, as they do, and eventually I got to write for Power Play Rock and Metal magazine. As I said, that's what this show's here for. I miss writing about music. I miss talking about music. So that's what I'm doing here on this podcast, is talking about albums and musicians that helped to shape my weird and wonderful journey through life. So while I was writing for Power Play, I did get offered to the opportunity to interview Doro in support of her solo album, Raise Your Fist, which was a great, straightforward Doro album. That's what it felt like. It felt like a Doro album. There's really good stuff on there, like the title track Raise Your Fist and the absolutely pummeling song Revenge, which has such a satisfying chunky riff to it. Do check out Revenge by Doro Pesh. That is such a great song. But yes, it was one of those moments where, while interviewing musicians, I really felt like things had come full circle. This had also happened when I was interviewing people like Joe Elliott from Def Leppard and so on. There was a tremendous sense of things coming round into that beautiful full circle. And it was very much a case of that when I spoke to Doro Pesh. I was a little nervous because, you know, this was a big thing for me to talk to someone that had been so important to me in the formative years of my music listening life. And I will never forget that interview. It was about 25 minutes, half an hour long, and she was an absolute delight. She was friendly, she was courteous, she was sweet, really, really open and warm, and it was just so cool to hear that accent that I'd heard on all of those songs for so many years being directed straight at me. And that was a nice fanboy moment, to be honest. I got to talk about Warlock. I got to talk about her solo career and how she started out and the how everything came to be with Warlock and so on. And, of course, the then current album, Raise Your Fist. And it was a very satisfying thing. And at the end of the interview, as it closed, Doro asked if I'd be able to make it to the London show that she was going to do. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it to that show, but she had offered to hang out and have beers. And that's so cool. What a really nice gesture at the end of an interview to say, basically, yeah, I've really enjoyed this. Come down to the London show, have a word with the tour manager. We'll hang out and have some beers. I mean, what a nice way to end an interview. And she's still going to this day, and she's still plugging away with her unique voice, those great songs, and she's still releasing new music, and that's brilliant. More power to her. Absolutely, please never give up, Doro. There is literally no one like you out there, and that's fantastic. It's hard to find things that are really unique in a lot of things. I don't know if that's just with me getting old now. I say old, I'm in my 40s, I don't think I'm particularly old just yet. I don't know if it's just my taste moving on, but I am struggling, especially in heavy music, to find things that really stick out as having their own real identity. And that is something that Doro Pesh has had since day one, and Warlock certainly had it. Triumph and Agony, it was different to what had come before with Burning the Witches, Hellbound and True as Steel, which had, as I say, that much more European sound to them. But it brought a lot more people to the cause and made a lot more people aware of Doro Pesh and what she could do with that awesome voice, that rasping, brilliant European accent. It's fantastic. And for that, I should be grateful. I certainly am grateful. There's some great tracks on that album. So when you're checking it, if you want to check out some songs from Triumph and Agony, do, of course, check out All We Are. I also recommend 3 Minute Warning, I Rule the Ruins, and which one? Touch of Evil, because it's just crazy. Yeah, check out those. So that's been my little look back at Triumph and Agony, the fourth album by Warlock, fronted by Doro Pesh. A legendary album in my eyes, and legendary album in a lot of other people's eyes as well. A certain high point of that era of European heavy metal. I'm Andrew Horn. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of my Rock Revival show. If you've enjoyed it, please subscribe on your preferred service. It's up on Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts. I believe it's out on iTunes. I know it's out on YouTube because I put it there. iTunes now. So if you're listening on iTunes, hello. It's lovely to have you here. You can also find it on my YouTube account, Podomatic, Deezer. It's all over the place. And I'm very grateful to you guys for listening into the show. If there's any suggestions you have for albums or bands you'd like me to cover in future, please do let me know. You can find me on most of the socials as at Andrew Haunt. That's Horn with a W, because my parents are awkward like that. So I'm Andrew Horn. Thank you very much for listening to this episode all about Triumph and Agony by Warlock. I will catch you again very soon on Rock Revival.